This week on Texas Scorecard Radio, our top story, property tax reform bills on the move in the Texas House and Senate. We'll also look at some legislation that would expose the relationships between lobbyists and elected officials. And we'll hear a crazy story out of Harris County about one local official who was stealing Harvey relief. In our interview, we talked to Vance Ginn of Texas Public Policy Foundation about the initial Texas House and Senate budgets, how they might impact your pocketbooks. And we'll close with a commentary from Empower Texans CEO Michael Quinn Sullivan. Coming to you from the 1836 studios in Austin, Texas, this is Texas Scorecard Radio. I'm your host, Tony McDonald. Find us on the web, www.texasscorecard.com. With this week's top story, I've got Carrie Cheshire, Vice President for Texans for Fiscal Responsibility. Property tax reform in the legislature on the move.
That's right, Tony. We saw the hearing in the Texas Senate recently where a lot of citizens came down to testify for the legislation. A lot of taxpayer-funded lobbyists and grow government interests testifying against that legislation that would basically give citizens more ability to vote on excessive tax hikes.
That's right. This is billed by opponents as, oh, it's this tax cap. It's going to strangle the cities. It's the worst thing ever. The reality is it's just basically saying if your local government wants to raise your property taxes more than 2.5% in a given year, they got to let you vote on it.
That's absolutely right. You got to vote on a uniform election date, that November ballot, and you know, give citizens more a say of these excessive property tax increases. We've seen cities all across the state that have increased their bills by more than 50% over just the past 5 years. We've got rampantly escalating property taxes here in Texas, and it looks like the legislature is going to give voters the control.
Yeah, so what were the taxpayers saying? What were the grow government folks saying in this hearing?
Well, that's right, Tony. We had over 100 taxpayers come down on actually very short notice. You know, out over the summer, we had a number of these hearings out all across the state that had hundreds and thousands of taxpayers. Here, with just, you know, a couple days' notice, you had people coming in from San Antonio, Dallas-Fort Worth, Tyler, West Texas, all talking about how much their taxes have increased and how much their city councils and commissioners' courts have refused to listen to them on actually cutting the rates as appraisals increase.
Well, what about the grow government folks?
Well, all of them were saying, you know, there'd be blood in the streets. We wouldn't be able to fund police officers. We'd have buildings falling down. You know, that, you know, that nothing, polite society would cease to function if we imposed voter control.
The voters will never approve enough taxes to avoid chaos. Really interesting thing. Pretty much everybody who testified against it has some interest in the revenue that they get from these taxes.
Not pretty much everybody, Tony. Literally everybody. You know, you look and it's mayor, city councils, commissioners' courts, school boards members, superintendents. We found one guy that we couldn't find his occupation. We searched and searched and searched. It took 2 hours. We wanted to write the article that it was unanimously grow government interests and insiders that were testifying against property tax reform. And there's this one guy that we couldn't find. Well, we spent 2 hours tracking him down only to find out that he's an administrator for the IUEC. Now, if you're wondering, I've never heard of the IUEC before.
I have never heard of that.
No one IUEC. Has, but it is the International Union of Elevator Constructors. That's what this guy was.
So what are they? What's their interest in this?
Well, their interest is they're updating a lot of old city halls, county courthouses, school buildings, a lot of these built prior to the Americans with Disabilities Act, and are two stories. All of these have to get ADA-compliant elevators.
So they're looking forward to more bonds for more buildings for more elevators, of course.
Government contracts. Yeah. That's it, man.
So the bill is moving forward, voted out of committee, not watered down, and some good improvements.
Actually strengthened to allow rural communities that currently don't enjoy the full protection of the bill as it relates to their city and county government, given the ability to opt in to the protection, similar to the annexation reform that we saw pass last session. That was spearheaded by Brandon Creighton, who represents a lot of rural taxpayers. It was a very positive thing to see. Very quickly, we ought to see this moving through the Texas Senate and hopefully come up to a vote sometime soon.
Keeping our focus on the Texas Capitol, let's turn to Destin Sinski, Capitol correspondent for Texas Scorecard. Tax reform, not the only thing that's on the move in the legislature. Also have some very important bills dealing with the relationship between lobbyists and legislators.
That's right, Tony. So Van Taylor, former senator, now congressman, had previously been a champion of this, these transparency bills dealing with the relationships between lawmakers and lobbyists. Well, he is in Washington, and so Democrat from Austin, Kirk Watson, has kind of taken up the mantle, picked up three of Van's former bills that didn't quite make it to the governor's desk, and then one of his own.
Yeah, so I wanted to talk about these bills that Senator Taylor had carried in the past. Now Senator Watson's promoting some good stuff to reform the relationship between legislators and lobbyists.
That's right. Yeah, so one of them for a long time has been a criticism is the revolving door deal.
Yeah, so basically you have lawmakers who leave office and then immediately go to work.
That's right.
Lobbying their former colleagues. And some people want to put an end to that.
Yeah, and reports out of the Capitol just this week that there's a Congress or a representative who was in the legislature not even 6 months ago making the rounds in the Capitol, you know, lobbying his former colleagues.
For a private client.
That's right.
Yeah, yep. And so this bill would put a two-year cooling off period on that, at least mean that they couldn't go in 6 months after they leave office. They'd have to wait at least 2 years. A really important bill, second one, dealing with disclosing and decreasing the amount of wining and dining lobbyists can do.
Yeah, so they're going to lower the threshold, make lobbyists report more of the wining and dining that they've been doing and eliminate some of these kind of loopholes that they use to avoid that.
Yeah, you know, people, I think, are blown away to know that under the current system, a lobbyist can spend up to $132 per legislator per day without any disclosure on food and beverage, food, wine, cocktail parties, what have you.
Right.
And the crazy thing is, I say per lobbyist per day, you get two lobbyists in a room, three lobbyists in a room,
five or six lobbyists.
In a, heck, you've got a pretty good party.
Yeah, yeah, it's absolutely ridiculous. And then there's another one that's pretty good that would finally allow lawmakers or would disallow lawmakers from being in the legislature and also serving as lobbyists at the same time.
Yeah, this is truly unbelievable. But you have these lawmakers who are in office and then also employed by private clients to lobby government
at the
very same time.
Yep.
This bill would put an end to that. I think really important stuff. And we'll have to keep an eye on how it moves forward now in new hands.
Yeah, yeah. So hopefully eliminate some of these blatant conflicts of interest, get some better transparency on these relationships between lawmakers and lobbyists. So thanks.
All right, let's turn and talk to Charles Blaine down in the Bayou City. This is really an incredible story, Charles. You know, a lot of people ask me, well, why are you so skeptical of government programs, charity programs through government? Well, sometimes the money gets stolen whenever government's involved. We got an amazing story there in Harris County of government officials stealing Harvey relief. Tell us about it.
Yeah, Tony, so you're right. This is really a crazy story. So we recently came across an audit from the Harris County Auditor's Office, which is backed up by an investigation by the Texas DPS, which lays out the story of a lieutenant in, you know, the Precinct 2 Constable's office, who not only did she steal Harvey donations, physical donations such as food and supplies, but she also falsified timesheets to steal, you know, over $20,000 in public funds through falsified timesheets.
Yeah, and one of the things you touch on in the article, basically this lady has a close relationship with the constable there, a favored position, and really abused that favored relationship to then not only to do a lot of things. Tell folks about some of the things that she did.
Yeah, so you're right. I mean, it does seem as though she abused this relationship. She's, you know, worked for him for 20 years since previous government employment, you know, when he was the mayor of another town. So she's been with him for a while. And so what the report details is instances of her going to the warehouse that they were supposed to be securing during Hurricane Harvey and taking, you know, loads and loads. And they literally quote some of the lieutenants in the report saying truckloads of supplies, you know, turkey breasts, chicken breasts, clothing.
And she's talking about how, you know, she's working on her turkey breast recipes.
Right. Yeah. She came in after taking a truckload of food supplies. She comes in the next morning and tells one of her deputies that she's working on new, like you said, turkey breast and pork loin recipes. I mean, it's absurd. It is absolutely absurd.
Well, so one of the more startling things that I've seen here is that it doesn't appear that anyone in Harris County is interested in taking action against this lady.
Right. And you know, it's crazy because you see people getting arrested for these minor crimes all the time and having to go through the entire court system.
Paperwork violations.
Exactly. And in this instance where we have, you know, a DPS report and an audit that shows that she did this, the DA declined to prosecute and they kept her actually on staff for another 6 months, only letting her, after this was revealed, only letting her go just end of 2018, beginning of December. She was, you know, discharged from duty, they said. So they even kept her on after this revelation was made.
Wow, that's really amazing. Thank you for your work on it. I think listeners out there, if you're particularly if you're in Harris County, if you're incensed by what's going on here, some pressure on the district attorney needs to happen. You know, people, we can't allow this kind of stuff to go unpunished. It's really, really, really bad behavior. Thank you for your reporting on it, Charles.
Thanks for having me.
Texas Scorecard Radio is a project of Empower Texans. At texasscorecard.com or empowertexans.com, you can find more news and daily updates from all around the Lone Star State. You can also find updates from Empower Texans and Texas Scorecard on Facebook and Twitter, and follow Empower Texans on Instagram. Texas Scorecard's News Digest goes out weekly via email and monthly in print. Subscribe online and find more information at empowertexans.com. Someone's always keeping score. We think it ought to be the taxpayers.
Well, it's great to welcome on the show this week Vance Ginn, Director of the Center for Economic Prosperity at Texas Public Policy Foundation, a PhD economist, really smart guy over there at TPPF, and leading up the Conservative Texas Budget Coalition. Thanks for coming on, Vance.
Thank you, Tony. It's always a pleasure to be with you.
Yeah, you know, I wanted to bring you in and talk about the budget. You know, there's a lot of talk in Austin about property tax reform, those kinds of things. But, you know, those of us who pay attention to the process know spending drives revenue. Revenue drives spending, too. But you can't really solve one without solving the other. And so every session, the Texas legislature meets and it passes a budget, has to pass a budget, a balanced budget, in fact. And we have these budgets out there that are being proposed right now. And I wanted to talk a little bit about the Conservative Texas Budget Coalition, the group that's united there to call for conservative budgets, and how the House, Texas House and Texas Senate are matching up to that. I know you're kind of an expert on this, so figured you were the guy to talk to.
Yeah, I appreciate that. Yeah, the Conservative Texas Budget Coalition, this is the third session where we've really set the stage for what the priorities are of taxpayers all across this great state for this session. And what we look at is for a conservative Texas budget is one that doesn't increase by more than population growth and inflation, which is really just the what the average taxpayer's ability to pay is. When you think about population growth over time, you also think about inflation. Well, inflation is tied with wage growth, so that gives you a good idea of what the average person's able to pay across the state. And what we also look at the Conservative Texas Budget Coalition, which is a group of 18 organizations all across this great state and also at the national level who are just saying, look, let's not have the footprint of government, which is spending, is what you were hitting on there, grow by more than taxpayers' ability to pay. And if we can do that, then Texas can be as prosperous as possible.
Yeah, I think that's the concept here is we all kind of go, man, government's too big. Well, even if you can't figure out what you want to cut, you can agree it doesn't really need to get bigger, you know, relative to the people. And so, okay, more people move into the state and inflation happens, the dollar amounts change, but you don't want the size of government to get larger relative to the people. So that's the basic concept here. So how do the proposed budgets, there's a budgets that are filed in the Texas House and Texas Senate, and they'll be pushed forward through a process. Eventually, they'll adopt one of these budgets as their final product with some tinkering and some changes. How do these match up and compare both to the conservative Texas budget proposal, and also how do they compare to each other?
Yeah, you know, in each one of these budgets, there's House Bill 1 and Senate Bill 1. This budget cycle will be a House bill that will start and finally be passed. They alternate each budget cycle. So this is the House bill. And, you know, whenever you look at each one of these, what I compare them to is our conservative Texas budget, which is, if you look at population growth and inflation over the last two fiscal years, was a growth rate of 8%. And that's $156.5 billion in state funds, which is the amount over the upcoming biennium for the 2021 budget. And then if you look at all funds, which also includes federal funds in there, it's $234.1 billion. So those are the key metric, 156.5, 234.1 to measure the footprint of government. And so if you look at the House budget in state funds is $160.2 billion, which is over by about $3.7 billion above the conservative Texas budget. And then in all funds, it's $240.2 billion, which is over by about $6.1 billion. So there's a lot of room for improvement in the House. But the Senate, actually, they have a state funds total of $155.8 billion, which is under, about $700 million under the conservative Texas budget. And then in all funds, it's $235.8 billion, which is by about $1.7 billion. But there's still some room to work there. Now, I would say, Tony, is that we've also excluded any money for Harvey recovery-related funds, which is about $7.1 billion in federal funds. I mean, that's kind of a one-time expense, unwarranted expenses, that we're going to make sure that that's the case. But we said, look, we're going to exclude that from these budget numbers, and that's where we're at today.
Yeah, and so basically you've got the House and Senate coming out with their proposals. The House, as you said, being $3 billion over in state funds, $6 billion over including the federal funds that come in, and the Senate being just under the limits that the Conservative Texas Budget Coalition has put forward. A couple of things on that. I want to know, what's the difference there? Why is that? Obviously, there are large swaths of this funding, public school funding, the share of that, Medicaid, you know, these big entitlement programs and big spending programs the state does, there's large chunks that kind of look the same between these budgets, and then there are differences. So what is the difference there? Just tell us, what's the difference there? How are you coming up with different numbers between these two bodies?
Yeah. And what's interesting, too, is we always look at it from appropriations to appropriations. We want to measure apples to apples. What you might see in some of these recommended budgets by the Legislative Budget Board is estimated, expended to, or budgeted to appropriated, which is apples and oranges. So let's make sure we're measuring the same thing, and that's where we get our numbers. And when you look at the House and Senate, the major difference between the two, which you hinted at there, was public education and property tax relief. So what the House has done is said, you know, we're going to put $9 billion in their budget for public education and property tax reform of some measure. Now, they don't put specifics about what each one of those are, because that will be done in the House Public Education Committee and the House Ways and Means Committee and along throughout the legislative budget process, or the legislative process. So that's $9 billion. The Senate has put $6 billion to those two, where $3.7 billion would go towards raising teachers' pay across the board by about $5,000, and then $2.3 billion towards some sort of property tax reform. So that $3 billion delta between the House budget, $9 billion, and the Senate, $6 billion, to just those two key issues, is really where you see the difference between these, and also where the House budget is over the conservative Texas budget.
Yeah, and so it's a little bit ill-defined, and this has been, I think, a frustration of a lot of people following the property tax reform, school finance reform efforts that are going on in the legislature, is, you know, people look at it, they say, reform. Okay, reform means change. Change to what? What are we changing to? What's the end goal of this? And so in the House, you have this linked in a way where it says, okay, this is for property tax relief and school finance. So really, you could just spend an extra $9 billion on schools, or you could give $9 billion to property taxpayers, or split it 50-50, or something like that, but that's not really defined in this budget. Likewise, over in the Senate, you have a little more specificity there. They say, look, we're going to spend $5,000 extra per teacher per year. We're going to give them just a direct in the classroom salary boost. So that's defined. That means something. And then there's another $2.5 billion that's sitting there saying this is for property tax relief reform something, but it's ill-defined as well.
Yeah, I think that's right. And, you know, I kind of like the idea that you define it. But at the same time, like it'll change, of course, right, during the legislative process. And look, what we'd like to see is more of that money go towards property tax relief, where you actually lower property tax bills. You know, House Bill 2 and Senate Bill 2 are the two bills that would provide reform, where it would slow the growth rate over time. The technical stuff about it is the rollback rate would go from 8% down to 2.5%.
That's right.
I think that's a key reform. That's an essential part, I think, of any sort of relief efforts that we need, because that would cut more than half of the growth over time. That's huge. But look, people want to pay lower property tax bills, and that's where you can limit spending and use some of that $6 billion or $9 billion that the House has for substantial property tax relief.
Yeah, and so the money is budgeted there for those kind of relief efforts, but it's going to be a question of political will. You know, I want to turn and address this issue. So some of the people looking at these different budgets have been looking at the politics of the situation. So you've got a new Speaker of the House, Dennis Bonin, considered a more conservative speaker, certainly, than his predecessor, Joe Strauss. He comes in January, so he's only been on the job for about a month now. And they're looking at this and they're saying, okay, this budget really was written throughout the interim by the bureaucrats. It's submitted to the legislature by the Legislative Budget Board. It's kind of these group of wonky bureaucrats who kind of do this stuff. So it's submitted to the legislature to go through the process. And people go, well, this is really the House budget. This is Joe Strauss's budget. But what's interesting to me is the budgets passed in the last two cycles have complied with the conservative Texas budget limit. So what's going on there? Is this something that we should be able to do again?
It should be. It's one that we should continue, because that's helped to keep taxes lower than they otherwise would be. As we were discussing earlier, spending really drives taxation, which is the footprint of government, how much ever the government spends out of our tax, hard-earned taxpayer dollars. And so it is quite fantastic that two sessions ago, the budget increased by less than 6.5%, even after they passed a supplemental bill. And then last session, it increased by less than 4.5%. And then if you look at the supplemental bill that's proposed this time to finish out the 18-19 budget cycle, it would still be below the 6.5%. So, I mean, that's huge. So now what we need to do is, it hasn't been changed in statute, but I think just the pressure of groups like ours with the Conservative Texas Budget Coalition, along with the attitude that, you know, Lieutenant Governor Dan Patrick said, look, he's not going to, under his watch, we're not going to pass a budget that's more than population growth and inflation. And we haven't. And so I'm here to say, look, we need to keep this continue. I would love to see it be put in statute, right? You want to make sure that you keep some guardrails around politicians moving forward. But
sure,
so far, things have been going pretty well.
Well, and that's an interesting thing, a success of this Conservative Texas Budget Coalition, is that, you know, the prime focus here is we need to adopt a good, solid population plus inflation spending limit, something that actually binds the legislature. But the political effort in support of that proposal has already been successful, so far, to the extent that the politicians have looked at it and said, yeah, you know, all right, well, we're going to voluntarily comply with this limit. We're not going to pass a budget that exceeds this. But it's a test every session. They have to decide, you know, okay, it was 6.5% two sessions ago. It was 4.5%, I think you said, a session ago. So is 8% enough this session? or or do you have to exceed that even further? So I think it is a question of political will for people out there to say, okay, am I going to go and talk to my representative and talk to my senator, talk to the governor, talk to, you know, the various elected officials who represent us and say, you know, are you on board or not? You've done it before. We now have what we say is a more conservative leadership of the legislature. Everybody seems to agree with that. So shouldn't we be able to do that now?
No, I think that's a great way to pose the question here is the conservative Texas budget good this time around? It's been great the last two times. Why not keep that going?
Sure.
You know, I'm somewhat okay with where the Senate budget is at right now, and I'm looking at that as a template since it is under the conservative budget. I'm still a little bit, you know, cautiously optimistic, if you will, because it's not much below the conservative Texas budget. And if you start getting other sort of expenditures in there, it would bust it quite quickly.
Sure.
And so that's something we need to keep an eye on. We need to keep an eye on how much money is spent out of the rainy day fund as well,
sure,
because that could also blow the budget.
Absolutely. Well, I think we'll have to keep an eye on things. I appreciate that you're doing that. Tell listeners out there, how do they connect with you at Texas Public Policy Foundation? And then also give a plug for your personal blog. Got a lot of great info on this subject and others there.
Yeah, well, thanks for that opportunity. So the Texas Public Policy Foundation's website is texaspolicy.com. You can also find my personal blog page at vancegin.com. And even on YouTube, I have a YouTube channel called Vance Ginn Economics, where I do this Let People Prosper series, where I talk about different ways to make sure that we're most prosperous, where we can keep government barriers from our ability to prosper out of the way as much as possible. And one of those big ones is the amount of spending.
Sure, absolutely. That's the whole that, you know, government can't be oppressive if it isn't wasting tons and gobs of money.
Amen.
Well people, listeners, go listen, go check out Vance's work. Go read what he's got out there. Go check out his YouTube series. Educate yourselves, and then make sure to connect with your elected officials. They need to be hearing from you that you care about where these limits are and how spending goes. Thanks for being on with us, Vance.
Thank you, Tony.
What are you doing Sunday evening? With the Texas legislative session back in full swing, we're spending our Sundays making sure you are staying informed with Sunday Scorecard, a product of Texas Scorecard TV. Catch the Texas Scorecard team and guests every Sunday at 7:30 p.m. live on the Empower Texans Facebook page to hear the latest news from Austin, D.C., or even your local city governments. That's Sunday Scorecard, live Sundays at 7:30 p.m. throughout the legislative session. You can find show archives and more information at texasscorecard.com. Join the conversation this Sunday evening.
Congressional Democrats are putting a big target on Texas headed into the 2020 elections. Empower Texans CEO Michael Quinn Sullivan tells us more in this week's commentary.
Democrats are targeting the Lone Star State in 2020. They're coming in big and bold. Will Republicans be ready? I'm Michael Quinn Sullivan with the Texas Scorecard Radio Commentary. Republicans have grown accustomed to having a considerable majority in the Texas House, the Texas Senate, and the state's congressional delegation. Since 2002, Republicans have held all facets of state government, commanding majorities in both chambers of the legislature and, of course, our congressional delegation. There are 36 members of Congress from Texas. 23 of them are Republicans, 13 are Democrats. Before the November 2018 election, there were 25 Republicans and 11 Democrats. The Democrat Congressional Campaign Committee recently launched an initiative aimed at taking out 6 Republican members of the congressional delegation. If they're successful, the Texas congressional delegation would have 17 Republicans and 19 Democrats emerging from 2020. The targeted Republicans include Michael McCaul, Pete Olson, Will Hurd, Kenny Marchant, John Carter, and freshman Congressman Chip Roy. If this plan by the Democrats sounds overly ambitious, it's just because you've forgotten your recent history. In 2005, when Texas had just 32 congressional seats, Republicans flipped 6 seats from D to R in a single election. Many Republicans who want to think the Lone Star State is reliably red should pause to remember that Democrats thought they had a lock on Texas right up until the moment they did not. Rather than be complacent, Republicans must get to work. Republican officeholders must work hard to deliver results on the bold promises they've been making. There's no more time for give us more time. it's time to deliver. Those same Republican office holders and their campaigns have to stop thinking cable TV buys made safely from cushy offices extolling the virtues of motherhood, baseball, and apple pie will win them an election. They must be in the neighborhoods and job sites, explaining practically how their policies have improved the lives of Texans. And Republican activists must take to the streets here at home, going door to door and connecting with voters unaffiliated with either party, and even start working to make inroads with Democrat voters feeling pushed aside by the growing socialist left. If Republicans want to hold on to Texas, they have to prove to Texans that Texas needs to hold on to them. It's not hard. It just requires work. With a Texas Scorecard Radio commentary, I'm Michael Quinn Sullivan.
Well, that's it for this week. If you enjoyed the show, make sure you never miss us by subscribing on iTunes, Google Play, SoundCloud, Stitcher, or Spotify. You can subscribe there and make sure you get the weekly podcast version of the show. If you already are subscribed, go on there and give us a 5-star review. Thanks for listening.
Texas Scorecard Radio is brought to you each week as a public service from the Empower Texans Foundation and in partnership with the Lincoln Institute and this station. You can download podcasts from each program and learn more at empowertexans.com.